I am holding in my hands a really spectacular book that took me kind of by surprise. It is called Boots in the Ashes, Busting Bombers, Arsonists, and Outlaws as a Trailblazing Female ATF Agent. It's by Cynthia Beebe, which is spelled B-E-E-B-E. And the reason it catches me by surprise is Cynthia and I, hi Cynthia, how are you, first of all?
I'm great. Thank you, Rick.
And we seem to have like 1,000 mutual friends. I've been hearing about this book from Fern Chapman, from John Ziemek, from Mike Comerford, all fine writers. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, this can't be that good if they're all telling me to read this book. Cynthia, can I call you Cindy, since we have so many mutual friends who do call you Cindy?
Sure.
Cindy, this book is spectacular. I was mesmerized by it. It is not just the story of a lot of bad people. It's the story also of one really good person, and that is you, a child from the suburbs who grew up in the 60s, who, you know, like a normal kid, you loved Lassie, and then you loved high school, you were a great athlete, you got good grades. I want to ask, just in short, that I think you had a sort of traumatic encounter when you were in high school when a friend of yours named Linda Fuchs got killed. Did that in any way influence your later career choice? Because I know you toyed in college with maybe journalism and some other things. Was that a traumatic thing for you? You just saw it on TV, and she was a friend of yours who was killed. Her family was killed by her brother. Did that influence you in any kind of way, a kind of seeking of justice kind of thing?
A little bit it did. It's what I learned in following up on that case, certainly influenced my abilities as an investigator. But obviously that what happened to Linda and her family has remained with me to this day. I can't say that I became an agent because of it.
No,
but
of course
not. It was a shock.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just something we didn't have at that time.
Yeah, and I think also your college career, the careers you flirted with, you write here, I had three thoughts in my mind. I would either get a doctorate in literature on Dostoevsky or Virginia Woolf, go to law school, or get a master's degree in journalism. How did you wind up at the ATF? Alcohol, tobacco, and fire. That's a big, well, it's not, it may not be that big a leap from Dostoevsky to the ATF, but how did that happen?
You're actually right. As an aside, Crime and Punishment is
indeed
the best books ever written, but which is basically ATF in a nutshell. I'd say, but I'm joking. But
it is kind of.
Yeah, yeah. What happened was, the opportunity presented itself. Mm-hmm. Is what happened. It had not been a serious thought of mine in high school or college, just because it really wasn't possible.
Sure.
But the laws had started to change. And I remember in high school, I had heard that the FBI had started to hire women. And, you know, very vaguely in the back of my mind, I thought that might be interesting someday. But I never seriously considered pursuing it. And fast forward, you know, 8 years or so, and I happened to meet a gal who was an FBI agent. She was older than me.
Right.
But she was the first person I'd ever met in any kind of law enforcement, whether as a street cop or a federal agent. And I was chatting with her, and I ended up learning, you know, about being hired by the FBI. I'd never even heard of ATF.
Right.
She filled me in on a lot of details, and I learned about quite a few different agencies, and ATF was one of them, and I decided to apply.
One of the things is, you didn't go in seeking, you know, it wasn't a glamorous profession, though in some ways it kind of turned out to be, but you went in with, you know what I'm going to read? Can I read? Your writing is, where did you become such a good writer? I'm serious about that.
Well, I partly from Northwestern, but also my editors, I have a fabulous book group. I had A number of old friends, Wayne Klatt, helped me edit my book. I had at least a dozen people seriously help me edit my book. And while I did all the writing, I wrote it and I rewrote it and I rewrote it. Some chapters I rewrote 10 or 11 times.
Wow. I just want to read one short paragraph that goes to the title. The title, again, of the book is Boots in the Ashes. And Cynthia Beebe writes, "We spent the day digging through mounds of debris." This is following the bombing of a judge's house. "We spent the day digging through mounds of debris containing heavy timber, sections of walls, roof, flooring, carpet, appliances, and furniture. In some locations, we knelt on the ground and sifted through mounds of ashes, reminding me of charcoal in the bottom of the grill. At times, when I looked around at other agents bending over and looking for evidence, I was reminded of playing in the sand at the beach when I was a little kid. But instead of building sandcastles and watching the waves come in, we dug out charred rubble and searched for the story it would tell us. It was still fun, but we had a different purpose." That really, to me, Cindy, captures your life. Yes?
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
In fact, until you read it that way, I don't know that I would have thought of that one paragraph as capturing the book, but I think you're right.
There's so much in this book, ladies and gentlemen. I want to talk to Cynthia, and I'm going to talk to you further, Cynthia, for a story in the newspaper, because then we can talk at real length. You know, do I have to take a break? We have to take a short break, but I want to talk to you about, because I had in some of my newspapers, I think a lot of people who have not read this book and have not had the lives you have had, think of motorcycle gangs as, Marlon Brando in The Wild One, and they're anything but. And I got to tell you, I'm going to tell people to buy this book, not just for your writing, but the picture of Ronald Petkus. It is the scariest picture I've ever seen. See, it's going to haunt me in my dreams. We'll be back with Cindy Beebe to talk more about her book, Boots in the Ashes. Welcome back. This is Rick Hogan talking to Cynthia, otherwise known to her friends and to me now as Cindy Beebe, whose book's Boots in the Ashes. It's her story of a lengthy career as a special agent for ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And it is also a very personal story. That's one of the things I greatly appreciated, because you're not loath to share your feelings, and I think tells you something about you, Cindy, when you're stationed with the ATF in St. Paul in Twin Cities, and you're having a decent time there. You have a lot of friends there, and all of a sudden your mom gets very sick, and you write here, the best thing, until I adopted my son years later, and we'll talk about Sam, the best thing I ever did was help my mom die, knowing she was dearly loved. That says a great deal about you as a human being. How tough were you naturally, kind of tough? This just seems like the kind of job to me where one has to be on guard and have a lot of defenses up almost all the time. Is that true?
Well, when you're investigating bad guys, it's not, you do have to have your guard up, but you also, in order to make the case, you have to be fairly aggressive.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In the sense that you have to conduct the interview, you have to find the witness. The best defense is a good offense. But I always tried to be polite and respectful when I was dealing with guys, even when I knew that they were murderers.
Yeah.
I knew that they would give me more information and be more likely to cooperate with me if I treated them decently. Because a lot of these guys weren't often treated decently.
No, from childhood on, I think, many of them, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you have a sense, and it peppers through the book, that you never, in all these harsh encounters and bad people who came into your life, you never lost any kind of your innate humanity. That's a terribly admirable quality, because I want to read something else. You also wound up as an ATF agent being on details for a lot of candidates and presidents, and you write here, "I worked on details for both Democratic and Republican candidates and presidents. There were Secret Service agents who strongly disliked the presidents they were protecting. I heard both funny and less than funny stories about the White House and the people in it, some tales going back decades. But, and here you get to the point, Cindy, but agents always said that they, quote, protect the position, not the person, and you never saw otherwise. That's says a lot about the people in those positions. Could you, for a second, you were in the Twin Cities and you wound up coming back. You always wanted to stay in Chicago and you eventually wound up coming back, but that return for you was kind of bitter. You say it was bittersweet because you'd made a lot of friends up in Twin Cities, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I had friends up there who were siblings of, you know, friends from mine down in Chicago, and
sure.
I had been up there almost 3 years, and Minneapolis, St. Paul is a beautiful city, and I'd fallen in love with it unexpectedly.
Yeah.
And I had a very good supervisor at work, and I was doing very well, and I think long-term I could have been happy up there, but I was fighting to get back to Chicago after my mom died,
yeah,
and
yeah.
After quite a bit of steps, I finally was able to come home, and I'm glad I did come home.
I'm sure Sam is too. But one of the things, you come back and you come back and you're doing various things. And one of the great things about this book is your ability to focus on specific cases. It's not a list of, oh, and then I did this case, and then I did this case, and then I did this case. You pick out some amazing ones. For instance, one starts, I spent only a day or two in Rockford, but it was long enough for me to get the feel for the Hell's Henchmen and to learn what was happening in the biker world. That was not a pretty scene, was it?
No, not at all. And I was lucky that I was able to see that bombing in Rockford before I was assigned to the Kagan case.
Exactly.
Because that gave me, I mean, obviously we learned about bikers at the academy. I heard agents talking about them. I backed up an arrest here and there, that kind of thing. But I spent a couple days, you know, working more in depth with them and meeting them with this enormous bomb that was hidden inside of a fire extinguisher
at
the Hells Angels clubhouse in Rockford. But that, I was very lucky that I had that exposure to the Hells Angels before the Kagan case happened.
Well, no question, because the other thing is knowing about them and hearing about them is vastly different than meeting them, isn't it? I go back to this this picture of Ron Petkus, literally the scariest looking person I've ever seen. I've seen some scary looking people. The bikers, yeah, they're into all sorts of things. I had some run-ins with them dealing with, you know, when they were doing some nasty things in Lyons, Illinois. The bombing, Chapter 13, which begins the bombing of Margaret Kagan. This is the big case of the book. Could you, I'll detail it in print, but could you detail it for the listeners? This is a horrible, very contrived, you know, takes place in Highland Park.
Yes, it happened on August 13th, 1993, and Richard Kagan was a very successful Chicago criminal defense attorney.
Yes,
he had been a former assistant state's attorney, and he and his wife Margaret were going through a divorce. He wanted to marry his much younger girlfriend.
Who he met and had an affair with at, they were sort of like colleagues, weren't they?
Yeah, she worked at the at Cook County.
Yep,
and they had met professionally, you know, years before. And Margaret and Richard's divorce dragged on for a few years, and Richard decided that he wanted to kill Margaret as opposed to go through with
getting a divorce. Yeah,
and Richard was a successful defense attorney, and he had defended quite a few different bikers, outlaw motorcycle bikers and stuff, and he called the baddest of them, which is Ron Petkus, the fellow
yes.
he's been referring to, brought him into his office. Pardon?
The fellow's going to haunt my dreams. Yeah, thank you.
And he brought Ron Petkus in, and he said, hey, I want you to whack my wife. And he said, how much will you charge me? And Petkus said, $10,000. And Richard said, okay. And but Ron Petkus killed people for a living. So yeah. for Ron Petkus to take this job on was just a way to earn extra money.
Sure.
And I think it's hard for people to understand that. But it, in fact, on his deathbed, fast forwarding many
sure.
years, he asked me to please. I mean, he truly meant to please convey to Margaret it was not personal.
It I know. That case, that could be the way, and also, Cindy, Beebe, the way you write this, this could be a movie. I was so taken with it. You tell it in such a compelling way. It's one of a number of fabulous stories in Boots in the Ashes. Busting Bombers, Arsonists, and Outlaws is a trailblazing female ATF agent. I want to end this. We will talk again for a story. But at one point, you decide, when you return to Chicago 4 months later, in March 2004, you got a call from an adoption agency saying, hey, we have a 15-month-old blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy photographed standing up in his crib with a big, beautiful smile. You and a friend flew to Moscow to bring this little boy back.
Yes, we did.
What compelled you to adopt?
Well, just much like my being hired as an ATF agent, everything kind of fell into place.
Yeah, yeah.
My cousins had adopted a boy from Belarus a couple years earlier, and I had literally walked through their adoption of their son with them, you know, every step along
sure,
the way.
Sure, sure.
And I was getting to a point where I had thought about it for years, and I was at an age where I thought, okay, it's kind of now or never.
If not now, when? Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And I remember I needed four or five different things to all fall into place, and they did, and it was almost like fate. And I felt like I could do it, and I could be a good mom. And I'm very happy to say I brought Sam home.
How is Sam?
Oh, Sam? He's perfect.
I'm sure he is. I don't doubt that for a second. Is he in high school?
Yes, he's a senior in high school, and he's doing very well. He's a terrific young man. He works at Ace Hardware, and he's trying to figure out remote learning just like everybody else.
Oh, no kidding. Has he read this book?
Well, I don't actually know if he's read it from cover to cover, but he's certainly heard me talk about it many a time.
Well, I hope he respects you as much as I respect you. Not only as someone who, you know, you broke down a lot of as they used to call them, glass ceilings in your career, and it was not always easy. You were in a real man's and sometimes a macho kind of world. But your book is really magnificent. It is made for movies. Are you writing more? Do you have another book in you?
Yeah, in fact, I'm actually working right now. I'm co-writing a book on Jeffrey Breslow, who you actually did an article on about a decade ago.
Yes, I did. Yep.
And I'm helping him write his memoir. He has a fascinating story, and he and I are working on that right now.
Cindy, I can't wait to talk to you more for a story that will come in the Tribune, and give my best to Sam. I'm sure you're a great mom because, well, not all great writers make great parents, that's for sure. But you are one of those rare creatures who's a great writer and a good parent. I look forward to talking to you again, and I look forward to your next book. And you should all look forward to reading Boots in the Ashes. The author's name is Cynthia Beebe, B-E-E-B-E. That is also the name of her website. Cindy, it's great to meet you. Our mutual friends don't lie when they said this is a great book.
Thank you so much, Rick.
My pleasure. You take care.
Thanks, you too.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.